Yo, welcome to the Willy's World podcast, dopest dope you're ever going to smoke, episode 25. Today is Medical Appreciation Week here in Australia, and we've sat down with the one and only Rachel Payne. Rachel Payne is a MP for the Legalized Cannabis Party in Victoria. We chat about legalizing cannabis in Australia, drug driving laws, and all sorts of other stuff. So check it out. Willy's World Podcast, Dopest Dope You're Ever Going to Smoke, episode 27. Today we're in the booth with the one and only Rachel Payne, who is a MP for Victoria. She's a member of the Legalized Cannabis Party. How are you today, Rachel, and how was your Christmas and New Year's break?
Hey, Will, good to be here. I'm great, and it's awesome to be back. I always love I love my job, so it's always awesome to be back here. But it was really nice just to have a break and, you know, like wake and bake. I even did bake some brownies that were a bit too strong, admittedly. But
edibles will get everybody. That's why Snoop Dogg doesn't do edibles.
Yeah, fair. I did find myself a little bit couch locked upon occasion, but hey, over Christmas when it was pouring rain here in Melbourne, it wasn't a bad thing. Wasn't a bad thing at all.
Even my 93-year-old grandmother loves edibles in small doses. My mom gives them to her and she loves it. She'll have a beer and then she'll eat a half a cookie and she won't talk for like probably a couple of hours, which is very strange because she's quite senile and old and crazy. But she loves it. So.
Good on her. Yes, I've got my mum on too. We're just at the point of some drops at the moment, but she has said that her knees feel better, her hips feel better, her mood has improved, and she said, I'm going to give some to your father because, you know, let's face it, he needs it as well. So, yeah.
Fantastic. So can you just give us a little bit of background about how you became an advocate of cannabis and how you became a member of parliament in Victoria?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess I've always been a long-time cannabis consumer. I have, my whole adult life, I have been someone who has loved a joint. For me, it's therapeutic, medicinal, my preferred wind down mechanism, and just a part of my life. I've always enjoyed the plant and all that it offers. But I guess for me, I would love to be able to grow a couple of my own plants at home. I love the idea of being able to bake my own food and cook with cannabis. So I think for me, I've always been a political person. I have been involved in politics in many different respects behind the scenes, always volunteered and happy to put my hand up and help out wherever I could. But when I continued to see that people were being stigmatized and victimized simply for consuming cannabis, I felt it was time that I offered a helping hand. And my background prior to becoming an elected member was I actually represented the adult industry. So I was used to working in a space as an advocate, as someone happy to stand up and have those hard conversations around sexuality, around pleasure, around letting adults be adults. And the adult industry is probably the most heavily regulated industry in Australia. And there's a lot of misunderstanding and misconceptions. So I was the general manager at Eros Association, and Eros has a long history in Australia of advocating, whether it be for sex shops, adult shops, for strip clubs, for brothels, for sex workers, for censorship more broadly, or the limitations of censorship. So when I finished up in that role, I sort of was looking to what next, and it was post-COVID. I was pretty burnt out.
Were you an elected member for the sex party? Was it that you were running for previously?
No, I have put my hand up to help out with the sex party, and I did run for the sex party. I think it was, quite a while ago now, but I did, put my hand up to talk about all things sex. It was actually in a federal election where I was running in Menzies. And the reason I was running in Menzies was because the federal member of the time, Kevin Andrews, was incredibly conservative, hated anything to do with sex. really strong stance against LGBTIQ people, really strong stance against religion and censorship, and he wanted to quash abortion rights. He was had a hard line when it came to voluntary assisted dying or euthanasia. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to go and have some fun here and stick it to this bloke.
Who was the porn star that ran as well for the sex party to get that guy out?
Yeah, that was Angela White.
Angela White, that's right. Yeah, I've actually met Angela a couple of times. She's actually quite a cool
She's
cool
so cool. She's such a legend. And
she got famous by making quite a wild video in the Melbourne library, I think.
Good on her. What a legend. What a great advocate for the cause.
Well, man, if you're going to support your cause, I like people that actually put their own nuts on the chopping block to use a figure of speech.
That's right. And she produces her own stuff. And, you know, she's a great
advocate of sex and well-rounder. Freedom.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So back to sort of, I guess, how I got involved in the party was that, I've been along to many of the 420 protests, and I guess for me it was like, what's going on politically with this group? So I started to collaborate with a lot of the members and a lot of the supporters of the party, and I helped out getting the party registered. I was happy to sort of go, look, I'm taking some time off. Let me put my hand up and help out best I can. And, you know, it was a lot of talking to people. A lot of people wanted to support the cause but didn't really want their names attached to a political party. I totally get that. And as cannabis consumers, we are sort of put in a position where if we do come out and talk about our use, what impact is that going to have on how people perceive us? And that's why, as a member of parliament, I'm really adamant to talk about my cannabis use. I am a medicinally prescribed user now, and I think it's important to have that distinction simply because I am in the public realm. But, you know, I do use cannabis when I have terrible period pain. I sometimes suffer from migraines. It's my go-to. So not a problem for me to make sure that I've got that verification. But I guess running in the election was really fun because we decided once we got the party registered, we had $20,000 for the whole state election. And we had eight or nine candidates in the upper house. We had a couple of candidates lower house. So 20 grand was going to stretch pretty far. And we just focused on what the core
issue was.
That's
to say the least. That 20 grand is nothing. That's
it paid for a couple of flyers and some posters and call flu. So our main message, and I still have the ring running through my head of, look for the leaf on the ballot. Legalize cannabis, look for the leaf on the ballot. And we spent weeks out there just handing out flyers, telling people to look for the leaf on the ballot. And we got here. It was amazing,
Fantastic. Actually.
Yeah.
Now, can you tell me what is the electorate that you actually represent?
I represent Southeastern Metropolitan Region, and it's an upper house seat. So when you think about parliament, you got your lower house and your local representatives might be, your suburb. Your upper house represents federally, it would be a state. In Victorian Parliament, it's a region. So it's from all the way from Frankston back towards the city to Mordialloc. And then we go up past Daniel Andrews, our former Premier's seat of Mulgrave, all the way across over to Berwick, Cranbourne, and then smack bang in the middle is Dandenong. So big cannabis community here, but also a lot of people who are stigmatised and victimised for cannabis use. And we see that in the Frankston and Dandenong courts, day in, day out, people coming in for possession charges.
And can you tell me, did you get in on preferential votes, or how was the process that you were elected to Parliament? Just for the people out there in the rest of the world that are listening, as I have a wide audience base in a few different countries, can you explain that? How that works and how you actually came to be with such, you know, it's quite an amazing feat that you've gotten into one of the, the largest city in Australia as a member into the state parliament. How did you actually accomplish that?
Totally. So we do have preferential voting here, and people can either vote where they select their own preferences. So they vote 1 through to 10, 1 through to 5. Or the whole ballot if they like, or they can just put a number 1 for the party. So when it's and that 1 for the party, that's when those votes are then delineated via how the party would offer that preference vote. with how I was elected was that I acquired about 5% of the vote just as first preference vote. So that's people voting for us as legalized cannabis as their first preference. And then you need about 14% to actually be an elected member. So normally there's five positions within the upper house in each of the regions. So I was the fourth elected in the Southeastern Metropolitan. And normally your first two who are elected might receive that quota, as they would call it, that 14%. But the rest would rely on that second, third, fourth preference flow coming down through too. And what we did was we actually worked with other like-minded parties who support cannabis law reform. That was our agenda, and that's why we're here. So parties like the Animal Justice Party, the Victorian Socialists, the Greens, and then even Labor gave me their preferences in Southeast. So it was a good opportunity for me to take the reins in that space. But also we could see that there was a real general consensus of just how high my vote went up incrementally as they counted through the preferences. Yes, I got maybe 5% of the vote for first preference, but cannabis was definitely mentioned in people's top six of preferences, which is really great to understand that, you know, I think as a political party, people are pretty disenfranchised with the major parties, and the Greens would be included in a major party of your Liberals, your Labors, your Nationals, Coalition.
The Greens party just kowtowed to what the opposition say, really, in my opinion.
It feels like that.
They just kowtowed for votes, and like why a lot of them do probably have a good agenda. A lot of them really don't stick to it. Can you tell me, curiously, now that you're you're representative of the cannabis party as opposed to the sex party?
Yeah.
Melbourne is probably the most liberal city in Australia, mm-hmm. and probably the most worldly metropolitan cosmopolitan city, as opposed to Sydney, which is a little bit more fragmented, mm-hmm. With different microcosmoses because of geography. Can you tell me what's the perception? Has the perception of the public of you yourself as a potential member, or go back to 2 or 3 years ago before you were an elected MP? Mm-hmm. Was it different, the stigmatization that you received, different from being a member of the sex party or one of the other parties that you were campaigning for before, as opposed to something like cannabis now?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, and it's something that I haven't really reflected on, but just how people interact with you when you are on that polling booth, because as I said, we kept the campaign simple. It wasn't about Rachel Payne getting elected, it was about the cause. And I think people appreciate that our name says what we're trying to achieve, and it's really honest and straightforward. And people these days are more inclined to talk about cannabis than still we are inclined to talk about sex. So most definitely it was easier to have conversations with people out there when you're polling or out there when you're talking to voters as to what you're trying to achieve. And the majority of people, whether they support what we're trying to do or not, had experiences where they knew someone who was a medicinal cannabis patient, or even talking to quite a few of the volunteers from the more conservative parties, they all were investing in cannabis. So you kind of cut through many of the different conversations, or even if people didn't think, oh, you look, I don't consume cannabis, but I
want to make money off it though, don't I?
I want to make money off
it. But I won't vote it in power. I won't vote it in parliament to legalize it though, will I? Because,
it was pretty funny, actually, the interactions that you do have, because most people just assume, yeah, you're a stoner, and quite happily, I'm happy to admit that that's the case. But I'm also so many other things as well. And taking up those levels of conversation, I think people were surprised as to, you know, you sort of had conversations, oh, I support it medicinally, but I wouldn't support it recreationally. And you say, well, what don't you like about it being legalized? If it's a medicinal industry, now that it's regulated, it's the same product. So it would be the same experience, you know?
I have numerous arguments with people about this subject. I'm going to keep my opinion to myself because it's more about yourself. But yeah, that is a very interesting perception that people do have.
Most people that I interacted with agreed that legalizing cannabis would be a real boost for the Victorian economy. And Victoria was the most locked down state or locked down area in the whole world in the pandemic. So that was a big contentious.
Chairman Dan.
That's right. Yeah. And that was something that I think a lot of people found agreement on was that, yeah, economically, legalizing cannabis totally makes sense.
So fast forward now to 2024.
Yeah.
Crazy. We're in this.
I know.
It's been a bit of a blur since 2020 with COVID. Fast forward to 2024. What is your plan as a state member to get recreational cannabis legalized in Victoria? And what's the difference as, you know, as someone that's educated on this subject? Do you think that's a step towards federal legalization? I've had numerous conversations with people that say that legalizing on a state level could potentially be a hindrance to federal recreational legalization. And maybe they're kind of a little bit, you know, flawed in that perception. What is your take on our the direction of federal legalization in Australia in the same way that California, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, or Canada or Portugal now, and obviously now the Netherlands, because obviously a lot of people don't know that cannabis actually hasn't been legalized in the Netherlands up until recently. It's just been tolerated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess first and foremost, I would reflect on we just did a debate around adult personal use, and we adjourned that debate off because we felt this conversation's going to take a little while and we need to continue. And what came of that was actually an amazing media swell, which was asking our premier, our new premier, Jacinta Allen, whether she had consumed cannabis. And she didn't. She said, "I don't want to lie. Yes, I have." Then that caused the treasurer to come into the situation in a flurry saying, "I don't want the premier being the only one admitting to you smoking weed. I'm going to also come out and say, yeah, I've consumed cannabis and I enjoyed it." And it meant that there was every MP was then asked about their cannabis use. And we saw about a third of Victorian members of parliament actually admitted to consuming cannabis, which is great. That then swelled into the Prime Minister of Australia being asked about his cannabis use. And, you know, us in Australia know that Albo would have had a chuff at one point. There's no denying it. Looking at his life experiences and just the kind of bloke he is, he hasn't ever admitted to consuming cannabis on the record. But what he did say was really interesting and I think really important to what we're talking about here. What he said was that regulation of cannabis is a matter for the states. The state looks after your health, your policing, your welfare, around mental health, around health service provisions. And I think when you're talking about what regulation would look like, it would have to be a matter for the states to administer and to create those rules around regulation. And the reason I say that is because the federal government doesn't really want to touch it until they have to tax it, is my feeling on that.
But isn't that one of the big arguments, though, is that the tax would then be put back into the system to build better roads, better hospitals, and then hopefully have some kind of system where all drugs are decriminalized within reason, and then ideally a situation would happen where the money from the cannabis then went to providing the services for the mental health management of addicted patients or addicted people to different, more illicit substances.
Ideally, and that's exactly what we would be advocating for. And this is why we want to make sure that this is done properly. In Victoria, we've already had an inquiry into cannabis use in Victoria. That report has never been responded to by government, which isn't necessarily a bad thing because them not responding isn't a hard no. We've had a groundswell of support from quite a few of the cabinet members, and we expect that the Victorian government will have to come forward with some sort of position on cannabis. But what we are really pushing for is for the experts to come in and provide that tailored advice as to what's going to work here in Victoria. Because you hear the criticisms of, you know, yeah, I agree that it shouldn't be a criminal offence anymore, but I don't want a shopfront on every corner like I saw in California. Well, that just kind of wouldn't wash here.
Well, that doesn't actually happen. It depends on the county. Yeah, so because it's exactly. not federally legalized, I actually co-own a weed dispensary in California.
Yeah. I loved my experience in California for this reason. But,
and just to give you like one of the pitfalls, when my colleague that I own the dispensary with went to go get our cannabis control license in Sacramento, he had to take $56,000 in cash to go and pay for it because cannabis isn't federally legalized. Now we've lost 8 bank accounts. So that's why I'm curious about that, because I don't know whether we'd have some of those same problems if say you guys in Victoria did legalize recreational dispensaries.
Yeah.
Would then, because it's federally illegal, would that affect the ability to be able to bank the cash that is turned over through the dispensary or however it is that you guys choose to have the shops that sell cannabis?
Exactly. And this is why it's so important to have the regulation right. And I had similar experiences working in adult industry. You're talking about legal tax-paying businesses, yet they would be excluded from banking services based on moral objections to the industry that people were working in, which is just totally wrong. And we made sure that what we pursued there was inserting a clause into the Human Rights Charter around employment and work, and no discrimination being impacted there by what work you choose to do. In saying that, I think it will take Victoria a little while, but I think we're getting there quicker than what we initially anticipated. The groundswell that has been of support here from the community and from the wider public around the cannabis conversation, and this is something that I think has been really important for us elected MPs being here, talking about cannabis every time we're in Parliament. We're in the paper quite a lot, we're in the news quite a lot talking about cannabis, is that now the public perception around cannabis is really shifting, and the majority of people agree. They don't think that cannabis should be a criminal offence. How we go about looking at what regulation will look like is about making sure we get it right. And working with, unfortunately, we're going to have to work with the government because it won't get done otherwise. So really bringing them along on that journey.
The Australian Capital Territory has recently decriminalized all drugs, and previously 2 years ago, Michael Pettison got through a motion to decriminalize cannabis, which provided the ability for people to be able to grow, I think it's maybe 2 plants per individual and maybe like 4 per household. I can't remember off the quote. I made a documentary about it a few months ago with Alec.
Yeah.
But, you know, when we went to Canberra, you know, there wasn't anarchy in the streets. There wasn't people smoking weed on every corner. And when we went to the pill testing place, now obviously that document came out recently where that pill testing could have prevented 66 different deaths.
Yeah.
And that the fact that they've discovered that half of the drugs that have been tested weren't what the consumer was intending to take.
That's right.
And so obviously I think that you also work with the pill testing people down there that I have had interactions with them. I can't remember off the top of my head the lady or the gentleman's name. But what kind of, as a state MP, what do you think that the public perception as like a trial program in the ACT and how it has been successful, do you think that will impact how your colleagues or constituents perceive cannabis and the potential legalization? Like, do you think that affects in a positive way?
100%. And I think and as we always say, you know, all you've got to do is look at the ACT for a perfect example of where nothing really changed when you decriminalized or had greater regulation around cannabis. There has been no increase in road toll. There's been no increase in hospitalizations, including mental health admissions. And there has been no increase in use. And they're gaining that data from the wastewater detections. So what we have seen a massive decrease in, though, is criminal convictions, something like 93% of cannabis-related convictions have been quashed. So I think it's a perfect example of where not much changes when you allow people their liberties. Most people just want to be able to grow some, consume some, have some on their person, and it doesn't really impact anyone.
And what about the perception in of like the other politicians? Like, does this get discussed when you talk to, you know, the premier or other people that might be anti, not necessarily anti-weed, but for the fact that they don't want to lose part of their voters, because all that, most politicians only care about staying in power and their you know, the people that pay for their lavish dinners and their expense accounts through lobbying. Obviously, it's not as bad as it is in America, but there are different underlying ways that people are, in a way, bribing certain people to go in the direction that they want. So what is the perception in between, like, with the constituents? Do you think that they actually think about that, or do you think that if it's not really a topic that they really care about because it's not going to get them votes to stay in power?
I think it is front and center what they do think about, by way of, you know, are we going to get re-elected, and particularly the government, are we going to maintain our governance and maintain our power? But in saying that, what we can see from the research, from the data, particularly around the National Household Drug Survey, is that the majority of people, something like 80%, nearly 80% of people, think that cannabis shouldn't be a crime. And then you can break that down into showing them, look, these are actually your vote. This is your voter base. The majority of your voter base think that it should no longer be a crime. But what I will say is, particularly when I'm talking to a few of the ministers and I'm thinking more broadly around health and mental health, there is this huge perception that if you allow cannabis regulation, that mental health will become a huge issue. And we have seen in Canberra that that hasn't been the case. We have seen in Canada that that hasn't been the case. We've seen in every jurisdiction where you allow legalization or regulation or decriminalization to some effect, if you allow people access, the greater the regulation, the greater the education, the less likely people are to suffer from mental illness. But also it's around young people and education. And if you are talking about people who are vulnerable, by removing that stigma, they're more likely to have access to service provision. So it's been an exercise of education for me, and really breaking down those, I guess, a lot of those myths, busting a lot of those myths. Particularly around health and mental health, where people think that this is going to cause grave concern. And what I generally also highlight is the medicinal cannabis industry and the fact that medicinal cannabis is used to treat so many mental health conditions that people forget that that's part of the conversation too. The majority of people who, when you ask the question around cannabis and mental health, who are consumers, say it's been nothing but a positive for them. So when it comes to anxiety, when it comes to depression, it has actually helped. And if someone has unfortunately had an experience of a mental health issue, or, you know, for example, someone may be suffering from psychosis, yes, it can be the case that they may have consumed cannabis. But what's more broadly the conversation there is, are they treating themselves? Are they self-medicating, essentially? Is a doctor intervention and assistance around how are you consuming, how much are you consuming, what level of THC and CBD are you consuming, more broadly, a better way to work with that patient than just saying don't do drugs, because it doesn't work.
No, most people do drugs, and most people that I know.
Same.
Most lawyers and doctors that I know on the weekend, whether they like to admit it or not, most of them do fucking cocaine and most of them party. And, you know, it's a very stigmatized thing where people fake, they have an outside face and an inside face.
Yeah. Now, and you sort of, you know, like bringing that back to like some of the conversations that I'm having, you know, you mentioned decriminalization of all drugs, and I've recently been talking because we've had quite a lot of people having overdose experiences at music festivals for taking drugs they thought were, say, MDMA, and it was actually other additives in there. And what I say is that, you know, I think the rhetoric is often, oh, it's young people shouldn't be doing this, you know, just say no approach. Well, so many different people, all people take drugs.
That hasn't worked for 80 years, like,
that's
really
right.
Nancy
that's
Reagan
right.
over here, like 20, you know what I mean, like 19.
Really,
but young people are just our most vulnerable cohort because we don't educate well enough or talk about drugs. We don't. Young people don't have the resources available to them, or the testing ability to test pills to have that greater understanding and make an informed choice. So, you know, so many people take drugs in Australia. We're a big drug taking nation.
We consume more cocaine than any other country on planet Earth per capita. Majority of my parents, you know, people, I know a lot of people that do fucking drugs. A lot of people. And they might not do it habitually, but, you know, right party, Christmas party, it is what it is.
Totally. Then, it is what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And this on this whole thing that we're in denial and we're in, been in denial for 50 years because of some capitalist agenda that we want to control because of the pharmaceutical lobby. Now, the more pressing topic that I'd like to discuss with you is the drug driving laws. I'm currently facing criminal charges for drug driving for cocaine and for cannabis. I'm being very open about it. I hadn't consumed any drugs for 3 or 4 days. I'm not medicinally prescribed. I do consume cannabis for recreational purposes. I am looking into getting medicinally prescribed because it probably will help me with certain ailments. But, you know, The problem that I face is that I now might get a criminal conviction and might not be able to go to America. Now, I own several businesses in America, and a lot of my ability to make money is in the North American marketplace. Now, what's your opinion on the drug driving, the fact that they don't test for impairment, they only test for the mere presence of whatever illicit substance is in your in your body at the time? And really, I think that's it's a kind of a little bit of an infringement of my human rights because I could be walking down the street and they could test me and then they could charge me for the same thing, basically.
Exactly. And I mean, if you were pulled over and roadside tested in Victoria, they wouldn't even test you for cocaine because they don't test for cocaine here. They test for MDMA, they test for THC, and they test for methamphetamine. So if you were pulled up and at a roadside test in Victoria, that wouldn't even be picked up in your system. They don't test for it. But what I will say is it's completely discriminatory. It's completely backward. And I am floored that they have regulated medicinal cannabis but didn't even consider the fact that patients still have to have the ability to be able to drive. And obviously, if someone is prescribed medicinal cannabis, their medicine, their doctor,
I couldn't even imagine for it's ruined my life. And obviously, I do consume recreationally. Yeah. I have had people tell me not to talk about this publicly, but I don't really care. It is what it is, right?
It is. Yeah.
And if you don't acknowledge it, then it's just, you know, you're just hiding and you're just basically like everybody else. And I couldn't imagine if I was a medicinally prescribed patient and I would say I was a single mother of three people and I got pulled over by a highway patrol officer in New South Wales, hadn't smoked, I consume medicinally, but I'm responsible about my use. I'm not impaired while I drive because I got my kids in the car. I didn't smoke 5 bongs and then drive.
Yeah.
That seems to be something that's really ruining a lot of people's lives. What kind of, in a perfect world, as a politician, what kind of policy do you think would actually silence the naysayers in order to be able to move forward? Because I think that think that this is going to be a big issue going forward about recreationally legalizing cannabis.
Yeah.
Because if they can't test for impairment, then there's going to be a lot of backlash against the idea of recreational cannabis.
Yeah. And when we say, you know, that you talk to any police officer and they say, well, I'm not here to test impairment. I just test for presence and because that's breaking the law, that's what I'm here to do. But what surprised me the most, and I've been obviously in the position I'm in now, I'm privy to a lot more information, but police who are on those RDT roadside drug testing stations, they're not trained in testing impairment, which to me is hugely concerning. Not everyone who is there giving someone a swab can also say, and if someone passes a drug test but is still clearly impaired, that officer doesn't have the ability to potentially test that impairment at all. So the difference between presence and impairment is incredibly important. And I think for police to have that greater understanding and the importance of that to be front and center on roadside testing would be ideal. As you mentioned, 3 or 4 days, you hadn't consumed anything in 3 or 4 days. You clearly were not impaired.
I wasn't impaired at all. And I did look tired. I had had a big night the night before, but mm-hmm. I blew on the alcohol test.
Yeah.
And it came up zero, and then they tested me.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously now I'm in a lot of strife for it. Now I obviously that's my responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was a medicinal patient, obviously Alec and I have been campaigning quite vigilant, quite. What's the word for it? Violently, not violently, but we've been quite campaigning vigorously. Excuse me, it's very hot today up in northern New South Wales. We've been campaigning vigorously to kind of change these laws.
Mm.
What kind of get out of jail free card would you? Well, that's probably the wrong terminology, but you know, like what kind of system would you like to see that for medicinal patients as opposed to the normal public?
Mm. Well, in Tasmania, they've got a great system, which is if you are a medicinal patient or are a patient of any medicine, then you are granted a health exemption at a roadside drug test as long as you're not impaired. So they are required to, if they feel you're impaired, to test that impairment. What's happening currently is that police don't want to go through the long, rigorous process of testing impairment, which seems to be quite onerous on there being more than one police officer there. There being blood tests as well as certain physical testing as well. So it makes sense to me that they just need to improve how they test impairment. And we do know that there is technology coming. There's some technology that more broadly tests impairment, not just if you're impaired from drugs, but if you are sleep deprived, if you are distracted looking at your mobile phone. It's part of sort of the engineering of the motor vehicle that actually can test all of that. There is applications out there like the Druid app. I haven't had much experience with it, but I do hear that it is being used quite successfully in a workplace setting. And I think that there is several ways to review this and look at it, but you can't just discriminate against one cohort, particularly if they are medicinally prescribed patients. They sit down with their doctor. Their doctor tells them what their medicine's going to do to them physically, emotionally, mentally, and what level of impairment they may experience, if any at all, and when it would be safe to drive. Now, if you were prescribed methadone, it just says take care when driving. We all know that methadone can really impair you if psychosomatic drugs. You know, anything around antidepressants, antipsychotics.
Because if I got done and I was impaired, and then I lost my license, and I'd just done drugs and I got pulled over, I'd be like, well, that's my fault, right? But the fact that it's just a test for presence and there's no test for impairment, in my opinion, that really is, it's just wrong. It's an invasion of my human rights. I personally think it's very highly unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, in Victoria, we did put up a private members bill trying to push on this issue, which was to exclude THC as roadside drug testing and to measure impairment for allowing for medicinal cannabis patients to have a medical defence. What we have seen is that the government has now decided to do a closed track circuit trial, which is, I guess people consuming cannabis and going around a racetrack. We're not really sure what it is going to entail. We are to get the final details of what that trial is to look like in the coming weeks, and the trial will actually start early this year. But how many trials do they need to do before we get to this baseline figure of, you know, if you consume cannabis, this is how long you are impaired for, if at all. And everybody is different. So why don't they do that for every other medication, particularly opioid-based medications? It just doesn't make sense that medicinal cannabis or cannabis more broadly is singled out. And again, it's stigma around consumption and stigma around, you know, oh, I'm going to smoke 3 bongs and then drive my ute out of here. You know, like it's just discrimination, as you said.
Well, a lot of people probably do that, but you know, that's not the issue at hand. If you can, if you've got a test impairment, then you can have a reading that actually should stand up in court.
That's right.
So, you're on a long battle to try and get cannabis legalized. What other issues do you have a stance on? Obviously, because you guys are a party that is like a what's the word for it? Not a preference party, like a
they call us a single issue party.
I actually
say that cannabis reform covers many different policy areas under the one umbrella of cannabis. So when you think about, I am a huge believer in the industrial hemp revolution or re-revolution. I would love to see industrial hemp come back as a viable alternative to the timber industry, to paper production, for building materials, and just more generally as a carbon capturing plant that has so many capabilities and applications. It would be amazing to see industrial hemp have its heyday yet again. Hemp is still classified under the Drugs, Poisons and Controlled Substances Act here in Victoria. And so what it means is if a farmer wants to put a crop in, he basically has to prove that he's not a drug dealer. And then he also has to have all of his crop sampled and reviewed, as well as a lot of security around his crop. For something that is just going to, that is just a crop. I mean, it's going to be turned into paper. It's going to be turned into hempcrete.
Fathers of America were all hemp growers.
Exactly.
And so the whole reason is DuPont and nylon rope, and obviously there's
banks. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's another subject. We won't go down that. We won't go down that tinfoil hat.
No, we won't.
So can you tell me how close are you guys, do you think, to potentially decriminalizing and then potentially in the near future recreationally legalizing cannabis in Victoria? Yeah. And if that was achieved, what kind of system would you guys like to see? And what's your opinion on the Greens bill to federally legalize cannabis in Australia? Now, me personally, David Shoebridge's policy that he has in the in what he's suggesting is that all of the cannabis is commercially grown locally in Australia. The infrastructure in Australia doesn't exist to be able to facilitate that. Currently, the German market, which is 4 times bigger than Australia in population, imports about 80% of their medicinal cannabis. I think that in Australia, I'm not sure what the exact figure is, but I think that a large scale of that is imported from places like Canada and Israel. If we did legalize federally, we wouldn't have the infrastructure to be able to facilitate a recreational industry if the cannabis only came from local growers.
I guess we'll start with, what we're trying to achieve here in Victoria. And getting back to, I mentioned earlier that we had the debate at the end of last year. We saw a really positive response, actually. The door wasn't closed. It was actually opened by the Premier. And the former Premier had just said, no, we're not going to talk about legalising cannabis. This Premier, our new Premier, who's been in the job only 100 days, mind you, she has said that she's open to having discussions with us, that we need to have community consultation. We need to have the advice of experts, and we need to sort of review how that might look going forward. That to us is quite a step forward. And everyone agrees that the status quo is not working, particularly the criminalisation of cannabis users. People who are just consuming cannabis personally shouldn't be criminalised. And that rhetoric was definitely an ongoing conversation within that debate. But what we need is that groundswell of community support. We need people to write to their MPs. We need people to get their MPs who personally support it to be vocal about their support. We need to see that the sky isn't going to fall in if a member of parliament starts to agree that this is nearly 100 years of failed drug policy is now redundant and we need to move forward here, and we can do it well. Looking at what kind of regulation model we would like, We are all about supporting, you know, your personal, those who use cannabis personally. So, you know, being able to grow some at home, being able to possess a small amount, being able to gift to your friends or family members is something that we really advocated for, and removing that criminalization and those prior convictions, so expunging those convictions. If we were to land on a model, I don't think we could say that we have one favored model. In saying that what's going to work regulation-wise in Victoria may be more geared towards a model that has worked in Canada, for example. But whether that's something that we would go forward and support, we'd like to see that it would be small enterprises, local growers, yes. But as you said, is the infrastructure here to be able to facilitate that? Probably not.
Well, the international different strains and the different flowers that are available are part of what legalizing recreationally is all about. It's all about options. It's about it's like saying that you can only brew beer in Australia.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's not viable. Yeah,
it's not a It's not It's just not realistic in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. We're also quite supportive of the idea of social clubs and associations because we feel as though, back again to that sort of the cannabis more like communities.
More like the Spain kind of kind of rollout that they've done.
And that's also considering what options we do have for regulation in Victoria based on how the current laws interact. But we can also look at what's happened medicinally. And it was Victoria who led the way with legalising medicinal cannabis in 2016 on a state level. And then the federal government stepped up and legalised it. So, you know.
And can you tell me if you guys did legalise recreational cannabis, whether it was dispensaries or clubs or whatever it is, to the best of your knowledge, how would that be policed? Because it's not federally legalized, and how, if there was a banking system that accepted the trade of cannabis, cannabis sales in a recreational form, how would that be monitored and policed, and would it be overridden by federal policy?
Good question. I think the regulation of banks more broadly in Australia is something that is quite grey more broadly, but I think that. We would see there would be ways of accessing cannabis, there would be ways of regulating cannabis. And whether that, I think the Greens bill sort of does point towards government regulation and that the government would be your regulator. I mean, you talk to anyone in Nimbin and they say, we don't want the government to be our drug dealer. So it's about
of
landing
course,
on
something.
But
that's a little bit of an old world mentality. And a lot of those people, they make a lot of their living off cultivating and distributing cannabis. Now, I don't have an issue with that, but the greater good is more important than someone's pocketbook.
Totally.
And the process towards legalization, the problem that's happening in California, for example, is that because it's not federally legalized, you can't write off any of your tax expenses. So you're getting your cannabis tax, you're getting your state tax, and you're getting your federal tax. So a lot of the dispensaries that are existing, they're not making money. They're making money in a way that their share price is still up because of the potential of federal legalization. So, you know, like I said, my colleague that I have the dispensary with, he's lost 8 different bank accounts. He just had his credit cards canceled for the third time. It's a huge problem in America.
It is a huge problem.
And I think it's something that here in Australia that not a lot of people talk about because they probably don't have the experience of dealing with it. You know what I mean? So they don't really, they're like, oh, just legalize the weed, legalize the weed or what. You have to have some kind of infrastructure. You have to have an infrastructure and a plan to be able to sort these kind of things, because if they want to collect the excise and the tax,
that's right.
You have to have some kind of system in place to be able to monitor so these businesses are actually, they can be profitable.
Operate. Yeah, that's right. And you know, growers, producers, and retailers should be licensed, and that's sort of where you are looking at that, making sure regulation is appropriate so it satisfies those needs of those service providers, such as banks.
So what's happened in California is because of all these taxes and because it's not federally legalized, a lot of people that have invested a lot of their money, especially in the cultivation sector.
Yeah.
They're now illicitly selling cannabis out the back door.
Yeah.
And it's and I know a lot of, I know a lot of this is going on from fact over fiction. And I think that, I guess obviously that's a very difficult question for you to answer because you probably don't get it put to you very often. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that is something that if we are going to develop a plan of action and an infrastructure, these are really important subjects that people need to discuss.
For sure.
Just like we talked about the drug driving test. Yeah. These are things we need to solve the problem before they come to fruition.
Most definitely. And I think that's sort of where, you know, when you do look at what happened in California, you've gone from a very successful industry, illicit industry, through to wanting it to be regulated, and they've over-regulated it, and it has essentially ruined business for a lot of people. So it's important that regulation is done right. And, you know, when you're talking about licensing and a state regulator, I mean, we have so many options of review here based on so many different jurisdictions now are in their fourth, fifth, 10th year of cannabis regulation or legalization. Whether it's, you know, more of that corporate model or a social equity model, we can have a look at what is actually working and what would actually work here in Australia. Because let's face it, the majority of Australians want to be able to walk down the street, pop into a dispensary, be able to ask the person working there, you know, what's this? What have you got here? What kind of high is it going to give me? You know, I want to go out and be social. They want clear displays and labeling on products to explain what the product is. They want to know what effects it's going to have. And if you make it that easy and safe, people are more likely to access cannabis that way.
100%. And that's the same with all drugs. And I think that one of the big problems with even in the medicinal industry, from what I've been told, most of my commercial activities in the cannabis industry are all overseas, but obviously I do interact with a lot of different people that work in the medicinal industry, whether it's cultivation, import, distribution. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are having a lot of problems with the TGA because they're not allowed to advertise. And one of my friends who has a very large import and distribution company was telling me, and I'm not going to say who that is, but he was telling me that the TGA you know, kind of
regulator
came into his business.
Yeah.
And he was explaining the rules to the TGA representative.
Wow.
Because the guy really had no idea what he was, and they're not very educated on the subject, you know?
No.
And I think that a lot of the problem is that we're kind of, I don't know, like I'm not saying that I have the answers, but I think that a lot of these things need to be discussed so that we can have a fruitful system that can flourish for the next 100 years, you know?
Totally agree. And you know, as you said, we need to have those broader discussions. We need to have that expert advice as well. And those that are well advanced on what policy positions have worked, whether it be internationally or even here in the ACT, what has worked. I mean, when you look at the ACT legislation, you think, oh yeah, that makes sense. But it's illegal to have a seed in the ACT.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And it's illegal. How do you grow a plant?
And a huge problem. Like we went there a couple of months ago when they went on just a week before they were moving to decriminalize all drugs in the state. And we did a bunch of interviews with. We went to an illegal grow. Went to a legal grow. You can't grow hydroponically. So that a lot of people that live in apartments, they can't grow. And then from what I got told by a lot of the outdoor growers that are trying to do it legally.
Yeah.
You know, theft is a big problem
because
it's out in their backyard. You know, someone jumps the fence and steals their plants. So, and you're not allowed to have any seeds. Like it's kind of but it is great that Michael Pedersen has put forward that motion and he has showed an example that there is not anarchy in the streets because of drug policy change in a small place. You know, it's a really a really good microcosmos to test something because it's a small city and, you know, there's not that much to do in Canberra. So, you know, drug use is quite prevalent.
Yes.
And from what I gather, after interviewing a lot of uni kids and stuff like that, like they pretty much said that cannabis use has increased a little bit, but they said that in general they didn't think that, you know, that that by decriminalizing drugs that mm-hmm. that was going to make it more themselves more likely to go and consume drugs, you know.
That's right. It just means that they have a greater understanding and less stigma around what they are consuming. Yeah.
So in a perfect world, this probably be one of my last questions. In a mm-hmm. perfect world moving forward, where would you like to see legalization go in Victoria and on a federal level? And then mm-hmm. secondly, as someone that's in the know, how far out are we in a realistic way, how far are we away from some kind of policy change in Victoria?
I would love to know the answer to that question. My gut feeling is that we will see David Edishank, my colleague, and I, we sit on the crossbench. And when it comes to any sort of government regulation or any bill that's coming through Parliament, the government doesn't have the majority in the upper house. They need an additional 6 votes to get any legislation through. So we are in a position where we're 2 very important votes to the government, so they have to talk to us, and we obviously are pursuing our agenda with them, and we're happy to be good critical friends. But if we don't start seeing some results and pushing forward with some of the basics around removing criminalisation, allowing people to have access and stopping the arrests. There's still 10,000 arrests in Victoria a year. 92% of those arrests are for possession alone. So we are going to continue to push our agenda with the government and making sure that they understand that, yes, we are a critical friend and our vote is important, but we need to see some movement here. Otherwise, we'll just continue to get elected and building our force in and building our ability to move on issues around that. You did talk about the Greens bill earlier, and I guess federally that's the bill that is up in Parliament right now. I'm curious to see how it does go, because again, the Prime Minister reiterated that regulation of cannabis is a matter for the state. So I think any conversation around cannabis reform is always a good thing.
I personally think that that's just passing the buck, though. I think that the Prime Minister, he doesn't want to deal with it. It's too much of an issue. So he's like, oh, it's the state's problem, when really, like, it probably, in my opinion, it's a federal problem. And that's great that there is people that are leading the chase towards you know, state decriminalization and potentially legalization in the future. I think that I personally think it should be a federal issue, just like they have in Canada, so they can have a federal understanding that this is how, and that's how you're going to have a flourishing, successful industry that can provide the tax excise that we need as Australians, with inflation in a post-COVID overpriced society where these massive corporations are price gouging us. And rents going through the roof. Totally. And a lot of people just can't afford to live anymore.
Exactly. And there's, you know, we've got a very a flourishing cannabis industry here in Australia. It's just illicit. And the amount of money that is in the illicit market, and you know, the argument could be put that it is funding so much organised crime, and that is leading to other drugs being imported and exported in Australia. I know that the majority of people who do support cannabis law reform think that, yes, we do need it taxed appropriately, and that money going back into resources and community, particularly around health and well-being. So I totally agree with you. When it comes to the federal government, they definitely will be the ones to have to look after taxation, but there may be options for the state to be the regulator and be able to have some sort of excise on products.
Yeah, I was just curious about the difference between state level and federal level. Obviously, America's a little bit different because it's a Confederate state as opposed to our Commonwealth-based constitution, I think.
That's right.
I don't know enough about the laws to comment on that, but from what I've seen firsthand, it's become a major issue in California and in a lot of states because
And each state in the US has its own taxation legislation, so they sort of operate on a state
of course,
state
but
basis.
the federal institutions that put that you bank with, they are taking the federal policy, And so that means that, you know, if you have a business, you can't write off any of your taxes, mm-hmm. which makes it very difficult to operate because, mm-hmm. you know, a large majority of it's just not fair. You know, you should be treated like every other business.
You should be treated like every other business, especially if you're legal, you're tax paying, you're operating within the parameters that you are allowed to. You're probably licensed, so you have to operate in certain parameters. And I think that's bringing it back to why this it is important for state regulation is because state regulation looks after criminalization. It looks after the health and welfare. It looks after planning. You know, where are dispensaries going to be set up, or where are people going to be able to access cannabis to be able to buy? The states do administer all the rules and regulations and the licensing around those key requirements when it comes to what legalization would look like here.
So thank you so much for your insightful answers, Rachel. You're a fantastic human, and I really, really love what you do. I have one more question before we leave.
Sure.
Recently, we have collaborated a little bit on getting some press for you guys. We did some crowdfunded billboards to change the drug driving laws, et cetera.
Yeah.
You guys have a petition out in the universe at the moment. Can you explain to the listeners that are Victorian citizens or Victorian residents, what the petition is, what it hopes to achieve, and how they can sign up or sign for the cause?
We have a petition currently before Parliament that we have sponsored, which is to review the Road Safety Act that would acknowledge that medicinal cannabis patients need to be treated like every other patient. And that THC as something that is only measured for presence should be excluded from a medicinal cannabis patient's need to have to report that in. So what we would like to see is this petition signed. If we hit 10,000 signatures, we are able to have a debate in Parliament about this. We really want to push the Road Safety Minister on moving in reforming this law. What we're sort of looking at is, hang on, every other medication is treated as a doctor-patient relationship. Information is provided to you. Products are labelled, as is medicinal cannabis. So why can't it be treated the same when it comes to road safety?
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rachel, for everything that you do. I think that you're an amazing light in a cold, cold world. You guys have achieved so much. You know, Michael Balderston, shout outs to the Nimbin crew, shout outs to Jeremy in New South Wales, who we've collaborated.
Yeah.
Can you tell me just one last little bit of tidbit information I'd like? If people would like to see change at a state level and a federal level as an MP, what can people do to kind of encourage their political representative that they voted in mm-hmm. for the changes that they want for drug driving, for the ability for people to not get scrutinized and labeled because they're medicinal cannabis patients and for drug driving reform? And then secondly, for potential reform in the decriminalization and the potential recreational legalization of cannabis and potentially other drugs as well.
I think it's really important for people to be able to feel comfortable in coming out with their cannabis use. And I found that that's been the most effective way for me to really be active in this space, is not only just as an MP, but as in my personal life, is just to talk more about my cannabis use and have those round the coffee table sort of conversations. Another way is just to get active. Follow what we do. You can either follow legalizedcannabis.org.au or rachelpayne.com.au. My Instagram is rachelpayne_MP. Share what we're saying. Get the message out there. Have those conversations. Write to your MPs. Let people know that you want this changed. And for many people, this is something where, I mean, as you said, Will, this is really impacting your personal life as well,
and that is my personal life. But like I said, I'm not medicinally prescribed. But for me, having to go through this, it's really caused a big negative effect on my life.
Totally.
But if I was, in a worst case scenario, if I was a female and I was a single mother and I had
several
children and I was trying to find something that helped me other than my opiates or whatever it is, or medicinal cannabis for an ailment, this would be a really, I'd be really scared, because if I lost my job, I can't, you know, if I lose my license, I now can't drive to my job and I can't provide rent. I can't put a roof over my kids' heads. I can't feed them. You know, like that causes a lot of angst for, I'm sure, a lot of people in this country.
It sure does. And it's either the choice between you consuming medication that works for you, say cannabis, or not using that medication and going back onto potential opioids that you may have found just either didn't work or has other more harmful effects, such as, you know, opioids are highly addictive. We don't want to see people have to go down that route. And people are either living in fear or having to resort to medications that don't work for them.
All right. Thank you very much, Rachel. You are a fantastic human. That was a great conversation.
thank you. Massive fan. And look, we've finished right on 420. Look at that.
Perfect. Well, it is actually 420. That's a sign from the gods.
It sure is.
Willie's World Podcast. Dopest Dope You're Ever Going to Smoke. Make sure to like and subscribe. Share this right into your local MP. We need change. We need to change the drug driving laws. We need recreational cannabis legalized so we can make some money and we can tax it and we can improve this world that we live in.